Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 to noon, or reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. Morning, Francis.
Well, good morning, Mark.
How are you today?
I'm grand. I'm really grand.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We're going to talk about some pretty grand things today.
Well, I'm actually a little sad.
Sad?
Yeah, I was talking to some folks, some friends of ours, who went on the wine trip that we usually go on this month.
Yeah.
Which is to Vin Italy.
So less sad, more jealous.
Yeah. Well, no, I'm sad because it's over and we miss it. This is a trip that we take. We travel a couple times a year.
Mm-hmm.
But Vin Italy is a wine conference in Verona, in Italy, that we in the Veneto region of Italy that we attend. Pretty much, it happens every year. We attend pretty much every other year, and this year we weren't able to go.
As far as I'm concerned, it is the best wine event of the year.
And it's your fault, Radioland.
It is definitely your fault.
It's because we have this radio show.
We blame you.
You know, it's funny. We have a friend who calls it, it's called Vin Italy, Wine Italy. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend who can't get it right, and he always pronounces it Vanility. I don't know. And I correct him every time, but I hope he never gets it right because I find it very amusing.
No, I don't know who that is, but it's hysterical.
Yeah, it's a pretty important wine importer, so I'm afraid to mention his name. Not the one we have on the show today. We actually have to talk about this show that we missed on the air with us in a few moments. We have a gentleman by the name of Harmon Skernick, who is one of the partners in Michael Skernick Wines.
Somebody who we've been to Vin Italy with a couple times.
And a very important wine importer who goes there to buy wines and also to further relationships there, who is a very interesting person in his own right.
Mm-hmm.
Harmon and Michael Skernick started their company maybe a few years before we did, so maybe 15 years ago, and they started bringing in these obscure wines like Bocca di Gabbia that no one knew
right.
What they were. And that was at a time when the industry was dominated by a few big names. You know, from California, it was Jordan Cabernet Sauvignon. It was Chateau Montalena and the big Bordeaux and the big Burgundies. And Michael and Harmon did, before we even got in the business, they went out on their own to find these small producers, these estate bottled wines that are hard to come by. And they started as this little company. They had three employees. They had Harmon Skernick, Michael Skernick, and one other employee. And that's where they started, and now they're like a $60 million company, something like that.
That's pretty good. That's a pretty good jump. Well, they were also voted Wine Distributor of the Year by Gourmet Magazine a couple of years ago for the whole country. I mean, pretty spectacular, you know, small business to mid-sized business story that they've done.
And what's interesting is they've really kept their focus. They still represent these small producers, and that's one of the reasons that we always run into Harmon in Vin Italy. And we're going to be talking with him a little bit later about the show, but. You know, we should point out to people ask us all the time, you know, how often do we travel? How important is wine traveling to being sort of wine consultants and running the wine program in our own restaurant and teaching wine classes and things like that? And travel is important, but it's important in its place. And it's not tourism traveling that's very important. So we're going to give you a little bit. Mark, why don't you give us a little bit of insight on traveling as a wine professional?
Well, I think that you need to love it, and I do love to travel. I love to see new things and new places and meet new people. It's one of the reasons I'm in this business is because you get to meet so many new people every day. But what happens is you can go to these places in the world, and you get a little perspective. You get to see when you go to a new place, you get to understand better sometimes why a wine is the way it is or tastes the way it is.
The local practices and customs of the people who are making it, plus what the vineyards look like. I remember the first time I was in the Rhone Valley, and I visited a place called Côte Rôtie. And Côte Rôtie means the roasted hillside in French. And that's where some Syrah is made. But the Syrah from Côte Rôtie is unlike any other Syrah made anywhere in the world. And you know that as a person who's tasted a lot of wines. And I didn't visit Côte Rôtie until after we'd been in this business for a while. And then we drove there, and I was like, holy cow! Because, I mean, when they say steep hillsides, I'm talking about rising up off the Rhone River, what are veritable cliffs upon which there are the most difficult vineyard land to farm.
Mm-hmm.
It's not possible to use machines, And they basically have ropes in the vineyard to help you get from one terrace of vines to the next terrace of vines. And these vines sticking out the side of basically what's almost a cliff. I mean, a 45-degree angle or more severe than
that. That no machine could ever climb in 1,000 years.
And, you know, that is what gives the wines of Côte Rôtie their unique sense of what the French call terroir, but it applies to any place in the world, including in California. And so having visited Côte Rôtie is important for having seen that to understand why the wines taste the way they do.
Yeah, I think I remember the first time I went to Napa, I had a very similar kind of revelation. I went to Napa, and for me it was more, you know, I knew the wines that I liked and I knew the wines I wasn't crazy about, and it seemed like as I drove through Napa, all the wines that I said, you know, these kind of insipid, nothing wines, were from these flat lands and kind of no character at all. And then as I went up the mountains and up the hillside, now all of a sudden I was seeing some of the wines that I loved, and it seemed like the farther up the mountain and the steeper and the more grotesque looking the vineyard, the more there were wines that I liked, and I found that kind of reinforcing of the things I liked, and I began to understand what characteristics I liked and why I liked them.
Well, and people often point out to us, or they ask us, so do you go every year? I mean, do you have to go to California every year and France every year and Italy every year and Spain every year? And the answer is no, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
And we're very fortunate being in the greater New York wine market, which is, and I am not exaggerating at all, it's the greatest wine marketplace the world has ever known. Everything comes to New York or the New York area in which we operate.
Right. If you're from Bordeaux, you sell your wine in Bordeaux first and then New York second. And then maybe Burgundy third.
If you're some obscure wine producer in the Loire Valley and you sell in one market outside of France, that market is New York. So everything comes here. We can taste the wines in an ongoing way. The producers, if they travel anywhere, they travel to New York. We can meet our friends who are wine producers and winemakers and often growers once a year, twice a year, when they come to us, fortunate and lucky
we are. A lot of the winemakers that you've heard on this show, the Paul Hobbses, the Kent Rasmussens, the Kathy Corsons, we met them initially in New York. We didn't meet them when we went to California.
Right.
So, you know, Barolo producers, you know, they all come through New York. Sometimes even they don't even speak English, and they're still coming to New York to promote their wines with a translator.
And when we travel, people ask, well, then why do you travel? And why we travel is, first of all, it's important. We traveled as young men. We traveled quite a bit to establish the frame of reference. Mm-hmm. We have visited most of these regions. We know most of these regions intimately. We've tasted in the cellars with most of these regions. We've gone to wine producers who we like or whom we like and have a relationship with, and worked with them in their cellar. Well, we don't really do any work. We just sort of watch. But we've been with them in their cellars while they've been working and tasted things in barrel, because that's one of the things that you need to do out there is taste things through the process to understand how they do things. But then it's just a matter of maintaining the relationship and going back to visit once in a while and maybe looking for some new properties occasionally. But it's not like you're going back every year to try the vintage. You know, people think anything can be FedEx to you overnight to try the new vintage. And in New York, you're probably going to be able to go to a tasting if you're in the industry anyway and try what you want. But it is important to travel for broader purposes.
But I have to admit, it is fun hand-filling bottles of wine with Paul Hobbs and seeing how that's done. And, you know, it's fun. Well, I'm sorry. It was fun for about the first 2 hours. The last, 8 hours, it became less fun.
And while it's important to travel and do the important business stuff, it's also nobody parties like wine people. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:15.
Down in New Orleans where everything's fine, all them cats is drinking that wine, drinking that mess, their delight. When you get drunk, start singing all night.
You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Francis Schott and Mark Pascal here with you. We are here talking today. We were talking the first segment a lot about traveling and buying wine and traveling to wine destinations. And we also were bemoaning the fact that we missed one of our favorite trips this year to Vinitaly. And we have a gentleman with us on the telephone who we spoke of earlier, who was at Vinitaly and with whom we have met around the world many times. Harmon Skernick from Michael Skernick Wines is with us on the phone. Hello, Harmon.
Harmon, welcome to the
show.
Hey,
guys.
Nice to have you.
Well, nice to be here.
So how was Vinitaly this year? What did we miss?
Well, it was interesting, actually. I've been there 12 straight years. And
12
year,
times.
I think, was the lightest attendance in the last 12 years, primarily because I think the Pope died.
We thought it was because Francis and I weren't there.
Horrible.
People heard.
Yeah,
horrible.
But on the other hand, that was is a nice aspect because it gives us more time with the producers and plenty of time to taste and evaluate the new vintages. And it's a great event.
One of the things that we thought was very interesting is that people may not realize. Is, I mean, this is a huge event. This is how many times the size of the Javits Center, Mark? The
Oh, it's got to be 10 or 20
probably
times.
Probably 10 times the size.
Yeah.
It's 15 or 16 football fields full with wine. I mean, it's incredible.
It's how this just to give everybody our listeners a little bit of perspective. Think of the Javits Center as a building, okay? Now, this is a very large area with about 15 of these buildings in it. And as you walk into each building, it is a different area of Italy, and you're kind of transformed as you walk in. Each producer has tried to replicate their home, their farm. And when you walk in, it's not like walking into, you know, a trade show. These people are inviting you into a little subset of their homes. I mean, that's how they treat you, and that's how they treat this festival.
That's beautiful, Mark.
Very well said.
I'm going to cry. One of the things, Harmon, that I think is interesting that Mark and I were talking about earlier is transformed as you walk into the building. That's just great. I am going to cry.
If you keep talking, I'm going to cry.
One of the things that we talked about that was different in when you go to Vinitaly as opposed to when you go to a wine tasting in New York is that people really do take the time with you. There's no, like, speed tasting through, you know, 50 or 75 different vintages as you stand at a counter. I mean, do you find that to be the case as well, that it's a different kind of ethos in Italy?
Well, that's actually the idea. The ideal way, obviously, to get to know a producer, get to know the wines as intimately as we like to get to know them, is to actually visit the estate and, sit with the grower, learn about his philosophy, learn about, you know, the recent vintages, taste the wines, and really get to understand them, get them under your skin, you know. But Vinitaly is the next best thing. And, whereas, like you suggested, in a trade tasting in New York where the customers come in and they power taste through, you know, 100 wines in an hour, you do get to sit down. They set up these booths where you have appointments and you sit down, and it's just like a recreation of visiting the cellar. And they'll bring samples from the barrels of the most recent vintages. You even tasted lots of 04s this year, and that's like I said, the next best thing to being there.
It's a much broader understanding of the properties and of the people and how the wines are made and what you can expect year to year, as opposed to what may be just in this bottle that you're tasting right now.
Exactly right.
I think one of the other interesting things about going to Vinitaly is it's nice to be able to, I mean, you represent wines from all around the world. We have wines from all around the world. You just can't make it all around the world all the time. You spend all your time traveling and none of your time actually in your own business. And so that's a nice way to sort of make contact with your established relationships. Do you find that you're mostly making contact with your established relationships there, or are you looking for new producers when you're there?
Well, in our case, it's establishing relationships, introducing customers, bringing customers over there, and then getting them to find the religion and see what makes our wines different from everybody else's.
Some of your customers already have the religion, Harmon.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why we're there.
Some of you do already. That's right. Our portfolio at this point now, being in business for 18 years, is pretty well established as far as Italian wines go. We represent Mark De Grazia, who's been in business about the same amount of time. So we're not really going there to find new things. Plenty of people do. I mean, there are literally oceans of wine available. A lot of it is not very good. And if you were to go there to find new things, I think you'd find it very frustrating because walking around, 12 football fields worth of of different wines and trying to find a needle in a haystack, just randomly, tasting wines, your chances of finding something special are pretty slim.
Well, Harmon, one of the things that you don't realize from your end of the marketplace is that's what we're doing when we go to most of these importers and distributors tastings is we're going through a football field of wines in order to find three or four wines. One of the things that's so special about your portfolio, and there are two or three other people who I think do something similar to you that have special portfolios like this, but it is very, very rare to find a portfolio that you can walk in and there are quality wines almost consistently.
Well, that's a goal we've tried to attain from day one, and I think, you know, if you think about it this way, you know, for, just take example Italian wines.
Actually, you know what? Before we take Italian wines as an example, we have to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:25.
Down in New Orleans where everything's fine, all them cats is drinking that wine, drinking that mess, their delight. When it gets drunk, start singing all night.
Back with The Restaurant Guys, Francis Schott and Mark Pascal here, and we're talking with Harmon Skernick of Michael Skernick Wines, and we're talking about finding the needle in the haystack of the really great bottles of wine. And we interrupted you for a moment there, Harmon. Please continue.
Well, what I was going to say is, you know, like I said, it's really difficult if an individual were to go to Vinitaly with literally, you know, hundreds of thousands of wines at their disposal. I mean, they'd have a great time, especially if you're going there to get drunk. You know, just go there and taste.
Yeah.
But that's not where we're in the business of finding really fine wines.
Well, at 2 a.m. sometimes we're getting drunk.
Oh, we're having a good time. Yeah, where there's wine and good people and good wines, and there's always a lot of fun. But it's a serious business. And what I was going to say is that, you know, by the time the consumer buys the wine in your restaurant, for example, it's been selected at least three times. You have Mark De Grazia in Italy who goes around to the estates and actually finds the producers in many cases. And then we go to visit with him and to Vinitaly and taste a lot of wines. And we then select from the selection. And then when you come to our trade tasting, you go through and select from our selection of the selection. So by the time you put it on your wine list, it's been approved by many different palates, and I think the chances of your customers finding good wines as a result is quite high.
Well,
that's really what we're all about. It's the reputation of finding and ferreting out really fine wines from what's available.
And not every distributor does this. I mean, because in Marco De Grazia, whom we know, and his brother Jano, whom we know, and you and your brother and my partner and I, our motivation all the way along is to find wines that we respect, wines that we believe in, wines that we think make quality wines and are good value for the money, whether it be that a $9 bottle of wine or a $6 bottle of wine or a $100 bottle of wine. And what most people who are involved in this business do is that, you know, they work in as a large corporation and like, oh, well, I want that good stuff, so, you know, I'll take nine cases of garbage in order to get it. And,
right.
You know, I don't really know very much, but this guy's a nice guy, and he gave me a jacket with his logo on it, so I'll buy a case
of that. A lot
of
the jacket with the logo, the wine opener, and you'll buy my product kind of stuff.
And
goes on more than you might imagine.
You send my family to Hawaii, I'll buy 250 cases of this wine.
Because most people don't know the difference. And the fact of the matter is we all the way down the pipeline.
Or care about the difference. That's part of the problem, too.
And everybody in the middle, Marco, you, us, we respect the producers, and we help these producers stay alive, which is very important, becoming increasingly hard. And we respect the end consumer who drinks the bottle of wine, because we all believe in it.
That's what I was saying about the needle in the haystack before. Sometimes we'll go to a tasting and find two good wines out of 200.
We'll be back in just a couple of moments. We're talking with Harmon Skernick of Michael Skernick Wines. We're talking about finding that special bottle of wine and how exactly it happens. Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:30. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I am Francis Schott here with Mark Pascal. We own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. Listen to us every day from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, and reach us through restaurantguysradio.com. Today we're talking with Harmon Skernick of Michael Skernick Wines. And before the news, we were talking about how there's an importer, there's a distributor, and there's, you know, us at stage left and the people that we consult for. And everybody in the middle, you know, we are working to, you know, to add value to the transaction, to select and select down, because we have great respect for the producer, and those are very, very important to keep these producers who are making these traditional wines and making these great wines supported and alive. And we have great respect for the end consumer, whether it's in a restaurant or someone who brings a bottle of wine home. I mean, don't you find that to be part of why we work together, Harmon?
Well, that, you know, that's exactly it as well. I mean, you've got most of these producers are small, family-run operations. They are not giant wineries with giant production, millions of cases. These are very small, family-run operations, and we are always trying to support them, but not just for that reason. I mean, I think we found that those kind of artisan producers, whether it's, you know, fine cheese, as you've talked about in a previous segment, or fine wines or beers or anything, those types of operations produce the most distinctive products. You know, they're not always the best, but we find those are the kind of people we like to support.
Well, and the thing is, you know, all these small producers can't get to the guy who lives in Sayreville mm-hmm. and get their message across the Atlantic Ocean, because you know what? Behringer doesn't have a problem getting their message across. Opus
right.
One doesn't have a problem getting their message across. Because part of what you're paying for in that bottle of wine with your Dom Perignon, you know, you're paying $30 for the wine and $50 for the commercials.
Right.
You know?
The Skernicks are part of the advertising budget of these little guys, and Mark and Francis and Stage Left are the advertising budget.
And
it's not some huge conglomerate with a TV commercial.
Right.
No, it's word of mouth. And mm-hmm. it's saying, you know, hey, you've been to Vanilli this year, or you've been searching the wine regions. What, you know, what have you discovered? What's kind of new and what's happening? And have you tasted it? It's cool. And it's really a lot of word of mouth and a lot of discussion and among people you trust and people who have good palates. It's really,
mm-hmm.
that's kind of a rare thing, that people who really know what they're tasting and can really you know, discern what quality is and where it comes from.
Well, you know, we were talking earlier about the companies, that the other ways that you can market wine. With these small wines, with Michael Skernick wines, with a couple of other importers that we really respect, there's no jacket that they're going to give you. There's no pen with their name on it.
Mm-hmm.
There's no that's not part of. There's no commercial. It's
right.
all
we don't
about.
Go to the, we don't go to the Michael Skernick golf outing every year.
It's although when you do
and
have
you
that,
never will.
Invite us. Invite. But when you have this small producer, you know what these small producers worry about? They worry about making the best wine they can make. Mm-hmm. That's what they worry about. And then Marco de Grazia goes and finds them. And then from that selection, Michael and Harmon talk with Marco about how to get it across the water and into New York and New Jersey. And then Mark and I go and taste through hundreds, literally mm-hmm. hundreds of wines from Michael's portfolio, which are all very good. But we select what we think is appropriate for us. And there are wines about which we honestly disagree. I mean, you bring in some wines and I say, you know what, I don't think that's great. But, you know, other people do. And that's it. But it's all about the quality of the wine. It's not never about the gimmick.
Mm-hmm. I think
it's a very subjective process. I mean, everybody has a different palate. And then we understand that and respect that. And I think that even if you may not like a wine, I think you often will find the qualities there and you can understand why we might have selected it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I often say to producers and customers alike that really we don't produce anything. You know, we make selections. And the only thing that we have going is our reputation. That's the only thing that makes our company successful. And 18 years of selecting good wines and having good customers, that reputation is quite solid. But so we have to be extremely careful what we select and mm-hmm. put in the portfolio. Every time a customer turns around the back of the bottle and sees imported by Michael Skernick wines, that's our only advertising.
Right, one little strip.
No wine.
Well, people don't realize that no, maybe Stage Left doesn't spend a lot of money on advertising, and no, Michael Skernick wines doesn't spend a lot of money on advertising, but it is very expensive to do the things that we do. It's very expensive for you to hold a tasting and fly all your producers in from all over the world. It's very expensive to take trips to Italy and the Loire Valley and Burgundy and California and to do those things at a, that it takes to make these really special selections and to separate yourself from everybody else.
I would add to that, it's expensive to ship the wines in the way they should be shipped.
Right.
Refrigerated containers.
Of course.
Store them in refrigerated warehouses so that the wines are handled with care.
Yeah, we had a show earlier this week about storing wines and getting them shipped at appropriate temperatures.
One of my favorite little abbreviations in the wine world, in the shipping world overall, is that a refrigerated container is also called a reefer.
Mm-hmm.
That had a different meaning when I was in college.
Reefer madness.
Yeah.
Had a different meaning when you were in grammar school. Maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a long time. Was that invented back then? Well, you know, but the other thing is you have assembled a pretty amazing collection of people, from the people who manage the different countries that the wine comes from to the people who sell your wine. And you have a similar philosophy to what we do. We had last week on the show, we had Charlie Trotter. We had Nicholas Ferrari from Restaurant Nicholas. And we've talked a lot about how to get good people and the right people for these jobs and to have long-term relationships. You seem to be pretty darn good at that.
You do have some great people working for you.
How do you do that?
Well, it's a little bit easier now than it was when we got started. And when we got started, it was just Michael and me and a half a secretary, and we had to do everything ourselves. But after, like I said before, I mean, just as far as reputation goes, when you build up a good reputation, word gets around. You may not have an advertising budget, but word gets around.
Yeah, word of mouth is stronger than advertising.
Yeah, but how do you...
That's where I'm getting at, is that people, you know, good people who want to go into the wine business or perhaps working elsewhere, want to be on the team that has the best reputation. It's good for them.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is we used to have to really seek out people, but now they come to us, and we get a chance to select people as well as wines and try to find the best people. And I think Michael and I have really pretty good talent for finding good people, and we really have had success with that.
But it's not just finding them. It's training them and keeping them. People tend to stay with you for longer than they stay with other wine companies.
Well, when you're successful, the company makes money, and the people who work for the company make money, and they tend to be happy. I think it's not only the money.
I was going to say, I know your people, and it's not just about the money. It's just not. I mean, I know the people who work for you.
No, it's a passion. They have a passion for the product. They have a passion for the company. I think we try to have an environment here that's very relaxed, and it's really all about the wine. I mean, that's really our philosophy, and everything that it entails. And that's, you know, I mean, you think about wine. What do you think about? You think of fine restaurants. You think of good food. You think of the good life. You think of, I mean, these are all things we try to encompass in our work as well as our play.
Well, your wines are in every good restaurant in New York and New Jersey. I mean, our listeners may not realize it, but they are. I mean, there's every good wine shop, every good restaurant has Michael Cernik wines in it.
Well, thank you. We have from the very beginning targeted fine restaurants as our clientele of choice. They are the best advertising for us. I mean, we get every producer who is a quality producer wants to be on those wine lists of the best restaurants, including Stage Left, this is the best advertising for them. And New York and New Jersey is the crossroads of fine wine in the world. Everybody
Hold on a sec. Can you repeat that one more time? I'm just kidding.
No, it's absolutely true. You talk to producers around the world, whether it's in France or Spain or Italy, and the one market they want to be in, the one market they want to be in the restaurants fine wine lists is New York and New Jersey.
Yeah. Well, we do benefit from being in that, you know, there are many what they call bi-state companies, because while the regulation, the distribution is wine is by state by state, many distributors and importers who have a license in New York also have a license in New Jersey, because it's so close that it's just, you know, many of the New York guys have their warehouse in New Jersey, so it's just easy to do that. And we really benefit from that.
It's not as important to be the North Dakota and South Dakota distributor, you mean?
Right, exactly. Or the Nebraska distributor. And, you know, that's...
I hope you don't have any North Dakota listeners here.
You know what? I'm hoping one day we do, as a matter of fact. That's what we're shooting for. But, you know, it's just that you don't have the concentration of population, and, you know, people drink more on the coasts, thank heaven. It's more part of more of our cultures. We have such an ethnic mix over here, and I think people are really into that. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking with Harmon Cernik of Michael Cernik Wines. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Francis Schott and Mark Pascal of Stage Left Restaurant, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:45.
down in New Orleans where everything's fine. All them cats is drinking that wine, drinking that mess, their delight. When it gets drunk, start singing all night. Drinking
welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott. Today we're talking with Harmon Sternick of Michael Sternick Wines, one of the most important wine importers and distributors in the world, as well as the New York, New Jersey markets. Harmon, let's talk a little bit more about Vin Italy and our experiences there, as we've done that together a couple of times. Really, really a special place and interesting place to meet winemakers.
I actually want to, you know, let's talk specifically about, you know, people. You know what? It's funny being in the business. I'll say, you know, I have to go to a tasting this afternoon and I have to go to work, and people say, oh, you're going to a wine tasting? Have fun.
Right.
You know, oh yeah, great. I'll have fun. It's not the same. It's not going over to Aunt Sally's with wine and saltines and crackers. It's about making a business decisions and
right.
and working in business relationships. And if you're to get drunk at a professional wine tasting, or even to get tipsy at a professional wine tasting, that's really not cool. And it's not cool
right.
socially.
It's like deciding what computers you're going to buy for your company while you're drunk.
Yeah, if you're serious when you're over there, you go over there and at the end of the day, you know, you're making financial decisions. You're spending tens of thousands of dollars, you know, and if your notes are a little sloppy as you got drunker during the day, you know, the next month you might be like, I ordered 75 cases of what? You know, and not even know what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's true. I mean, it is a business. My friends, too, I mean, I think that what we do for a living is ridiculous. It's all we do is go out and have fun and have parties and drink wine.
It can be ridiculous, and we do have fun and go to parties and drink wine.
But you have to do it at the right times. I mean, when you are working during working hours and when you go to a tasting and you're tasting all day long, in Italy it's from 9 a.m. till 6 p.m., you're tasting all day long. If you don't spit, you are not only going to make poor decisions, you know, but you are going to be, you know, drunk. I mean,
Right. You're going to make a fool of yourself.
Exactly. You'll make a fool of yourself. And you know what? I got to admit to you, I mean, in this business, it's an occupational hazard, mm-hmm. alcoholism. I mean, there are people who drink too much.
Yep.
But to be successful, you have to treat it as a business, and you have to, you know, drink at the right times with dinner and at night. And during the day, you have to work, and you have to get to sleep at a reasonable hour, which some people don't do. But
we don't do that very well at Vin Italy.
No.
That's not a place
I don't do this. There's time for sleep. I'll be dead
we'll
a long
sleep
time.
When we
there's
come
time
home.
For sleep.
It's difficult because at night the producers do like to entertain. Mm-hmm. And
that's so hard. You're right, Harmon. It's so hard to go to somebody's house and have them cook for us in the back vintages, and it just goes on and on
and
on.
Oh, and the risotto and the pasta and the truffles and
Don't you out there feel bad for us in listener land right now?
I'll tell you, and I have to share this. We're talking about how arduous this task is, but some of my favorite memories of Vin Italy are, you know, and Jeannie is one of your producers from Suave.
Yes.
And just to give people background, you're driving through Suave, and the first thing that you encounter is this giant factory that says Bola on the outside of it. And you're kind of like, you know, you're making wine in a big old factory. That's why it doesn't taste very good.
There's a term, wine finery.
Yeah. but then as you go kind of into the slightly rolling hills of Suave, you really start to get a feel for the other things that are going on there. The small producers, the little farms, and a producer that you took us to, and one of my fondest memories, and both times that we've been to Vin Italy together, we went and had dinner in the wine cellar at Gini, that's G-I-N-I,
right.
And what a special, special place, you know. Mama Jeannie and the Jeannie family cooks for you know, the 40 of us who are sitting at one long table in the middle of their basement.
40? 100.
Okay, 100.
Yeah.
And
Mark was drunk, he doesn't remember.
But you're tasting their wines in context. You're tasting their wine with them. You're tasting their wine with their food, their culture. You get the whole perspective. And you know, Francis and I talked about, do you have to travel? You don't have to travel to these places, but you do get a different perspective when you do.
Well,
and
you understand what makes these wines special when you do. I think your example of Suave and Bola is absolutely, you know, spot on, as they say in England. I mean, Gini, which is a small producer, they're located in an area called Suave Classico. This is the rolling hills and the wonderful vineyards that made Suave the household name that it is,
mm-hmm.
made it what it's what made it famous. And then Bola came in and made a factory out of it and traded on that fame to make a lot of swill.
So right. The insipid wine we know today.
As if they were making chairs instead of wine.
But the original Suave Classico vineyards, which make the great Suave, is a very small percentage of what can be called Suave.
Mm-hmm.
And Genie is located in the heart of that district, and they make the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that party that you talk about, that dinner that we're for 100 people, that intimate dinner for 100
right.
that people are invited to, is absolutely the highlight of Vinitaly every year. Mama Genie comes around with a giant pot of risotto that literally is stirred with almost a shovel, you know?
Yeah, I remember.
Harmon, I learned a very valuable lesson when she came around with that risotto for seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Don't say no.
Oh, no. And thirds.
We've been talking with Harmon Skernick of Michael Skernick Wines, and we're talking about wine and how we integrate it into our lives and a wine professional. And Harmon, I want to thank you for taking the time to come.
Harmon, thanks
talk
so much for being our guest today.
My pleasure.
And you can find out more about Michael Skernick Wines and Harmon Skernick when you check our website later on today. That's www.restaurantguysradio.com. And we'll be talking about that. And we'll also put up some information about Vinitaly, which you can attend as a consumer on the weekends. It's for professional during the weekend, and weekends consumers can come. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. Time is 11:55.
Down in New Orleans where everything's fine, all them cats is drinking that wine, drinking that mist, their delight. When it gets drunk, start singing all night, drinking wine.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Francis and Mark, who just were talking with Harmon Skernick of Michael Skernick Wines, one of the most important estate wines from small producers. And that was a fun little talk about Vinitaly, the big wine fair.
For me, it just brings back so many memories, and I love Vinitaly. I love being there. You know, the last time we went, Jennifer came with us. She was actually working for us at the time. And
Jennifer's Mark's wife.
Really, really a great trip.
Yeah, well, I agree. The food was great. The restaurants are great. And if anyone wants to go to Vinitaly, they can check our website later. I'll put the information out. And we'll even make some restaurant recommendations that are way out of the way that you would never find.
Do you remember what happened at the end of that night at Genie the last time we were there?
You mean when you told me that you didn't like grappa? Is that the one?
Yes. I've had a long before that hatred for grappa.
Mark despises it.
Well, for my whole life, I had lousy grappas that tasted like gasoline.
I love grappa, even the ones that taste like gasoline.
Well, I don't like the ones that taste like gasoline. Anyway, Francis and I were at Vinitaly, and we found these great little regions of that were making grappa. One was called Bramaterra, and one was called Lessona.
There were two inner regions of Piedmont that mm-hmm. weren't available in the country, and the producer's name was Sela. How's that?
Right. And that was the producer of this grappa. And he gave us these sample bottles to bring to Harmon and Michael to see if they wanted to import them into the country.
Grappa di Bramaterra and Grappa di Lessona.
Well, the time to sample grappa is not at 2 a.m. on the bus ride back from Genie.
As a matter of fact, yes, it is. All I remember, by the way, is my partner is like, oh, grappa, we have to have grappa. Why are we going to bring in a grappa? I don't really like grappa. I'm the Irish guy, right? I'm drinking grappa, and I can't get my Italian partner to drink it. All I know is that the little sample bottles of Bramaterra and Lessona grappa, Mark's like, I love grappa. This is great.
Phenomenal.
That was great.
So, and what I learned then is grappa has its time and its place.
Yeah, and grappa takes its revenge on you the next morning is the other thing you learned, because we went to work at 9 o'clock
in
the morning.
Actually, we flew back to Milan the next morning, and it was a rough, rough flight.
You know, that's what you need. You need your partner to take care of you.
Thank you. Yeah. But actually, on that flight, the greatest shrimp risotto I've ever had.
Best
plane food ever.
On an airplane. That was pretty amazing. Actually, after that, you flew home, but I flew to Ireland to go visit my family.
Right.
Well, you spent another hour with the Restaurant Guys talking about traveling for wine, Vinitaly, Italian wines, talking with Harmon Skernick, one of the best importers of small producer wines in America. Listen to us every day from 11 a.m. to 12 noon. I am Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450.